The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions. Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to the Thursday edition of Straight Talk Money. Peggy Tuck and Dave Dyer, and as promised in our tease this morning, we've got a very, very interesting guest. Since the election, we have heard a lot about how we're going to bring back, how the president wants to bring the jobs back to America, bring manufacturing back to America. And so there's been a lot of talk about that. I came across a very interesting group just recently while I was researching for the radio show. So I'm so excited today because I have Harry Moser. He founded what's called the Reshoring Initiative. He did this in 2010. As a way to bring manufacturing jobs back to the U.S. Now, prior to that, starting that, he was held leadership position at GF Machining Solutions. And his efforts have really been recognized. In 2010, he was inducted into the Industry Week Manufacturing Hall of Fame, and he was named Quality Magazine's Quality Professional of the Year in 2012. So it's my pleasure to welcome to the show Harry Moser, president and founder of the Reshoring Initiative. Welcome, Harry. How are you today?
I'm great, Peggy and Dave. It's great to be here. The way we get things done is to communicate with companies and let them know it's possible to bring it back, and you're helping make that happen. So I'm really happy.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic.
You should see your smile.
Well, I'd like to start off with, okay, so a lot of companies, you know, first of all, how did this happen where so many of these jobs actually left our country? Because there certainly seems to be plenty of people here to work.
Yeah, the companies were able to move work to initially Mexico and eventually Japan, China, India, Korea, because the wages in those countries were maybe 5% of our wages. And they were able to make a product for maybe half the cost that we could make it for here. And so one company would do it in an industry, and then the other companies would say, well, I've got to do it too, because otherwise I'm going to go out of business and I'll have no jobs at all. So they went because the wages were so low that it just sucked them in just like a vacuum. And for many of them, for their personal financial interests for the company, it was the right decision, even if finally it was a tough decision for the U.S.
But then in the long term, things started changing, right? The wages went up over there. There were quality issues, tax issues, transportation issues. There are a lot of reasons.
Exactly. Yeah. The times changed. The wages in China. China's the 800-pound gorilla in this. The wages in China have gone up about 13% to 15% per year for the last 15, 16 years. They've gone from almost nothing, maybe 5% of the U.S. level, to maybe 20 or 25% of the U.S. level. And since their productivity is still not as high as ours, the cost gap or the price gap between the U.S. and China has closed to the point where those other factors that you were alluding to, the freight and the duty, the quality, the travel cost by the company, the extra carrying cost of inventory, the inability to deliver because your lead time's so long. All these things now are big enough that relative to that reduced price gap, it now makes sense for companies to go back, do the math, and in some cases figure out it makes sense to bring the work back.
And your role for your organization, it's reshoring.org, is that right?
It's the name of the organization is the Reshoring Initiative, and the website is reshorenow.org.
Okay, great. You're in a position to actually help manufacturers bring these jobs back, bring the production back here, and you have some resources to do that, right?
Exactly. First, we document the trend so we know what industries are coming back for what reasons, so that they're competitors, their peers can say, like Ford could say, GM brought these parts back, maybe we should bring those parts back. So first we provide the data, and then second, we promote it, like today, and then third, we have a free online software called the total cost of ownership estimator, which helps the company quantify all of those costs that you referred to and I expanded on, about 29 different costs that they used to ignore, and now it helps them quantify them so they can say, huh, that price gap that used to be 40 is down to 20, and now these other costs come up to 25, so now we're 5 points better off being here than being there.
Harry, how much of a role does the consumer actually play in maybe getting these jobs and getting these companies to come back to the U.S.? There was an Associated Press poll that was out last year that found that 75% of Americans really do want to buy American, but they also want to buy cheaper.
Yeah, the consumer certainly has played an important role in driving the work offshore because they insisted on, they went to the store that offered the lowest price, mm-hmm. and so the one that offered the cheapest offshore product got the business. So what can they do about it? They can seek out the Made in USA product. For most of the consumer goods that we buy, if they were made here in the U.S., at most the price would be 10 or 15% higher. Not all, but most products, 10 or 15% higher if the companies look at the total cost. So the question is, will, if Target or Walmart, whomever offered something at 10 or 15% higher, but with Made in USA slapped all over it, will the customer buy that preferentially instead of the cheaper product from China? And if the public decides to do that and supports that, then the work will come back. I mean, it's as simple as that. They're the buyers. They hold the whip, so to speak.
Okay.
Walmart actually has a significant program underway to bring back $250 billion, that's with a B, dollars Oof. Worth of Made in USA products
wow.
over a 10-year period.
Yeah. I love it. Well, yeah, and your message works better with certain types of manufacturing. I think mainly heavy manufacturing, appliances, autos, things like that. We may never bring back shirts or shoes. Is that right?
It's easier to bring back products that can be easily automated, automobiles, appliances, electronics, etc., because you can get the labor content down low enough that it overcomes
okay.
that those other costs make out. But apparel is actually, I think, the fifth highest industry category for reshoring. And
really?
We've had
wow.
something like 13,000 apparel jobs come back to the U.S. And there's also very good signs of automation. Sewing we think of as a simple job, but you have to keep the fabric flat and it can't wrinkle. You've got to be very careful. And they're starting to come out with robots and other methodologies that make it possible to do that, and again, cut the labor content enough so that you can now make the product here.
Okay, I love it. Well, you know, there was a trend also of bringing back these, this is a service job, but call centers that were all offshored to Bangladesh or someplace where people spoke English as a second language. And now they're bringing those back and putting them in small towns where people can do call center work from home.
Exactly. There's a significant trend towards the call centers. Also, software, a lot of the IT, the coding had gone to India, and now in rural areas they're starting up coding centers where companies are providing that service. There's a work called back office processing, which mm-hmm. is coming back. So it's a getting started in all those categories.
I love it.
Okay, we're coming up against a break here. We are going to be back, and when we come back, we're going to have the opening bells the day after the Fed put the foot on the gas pedal. We've got Harry Mosher, your president and founder of the Reshoring Initiative. We will be back after these important messages.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Let's get back to our guest, Harry Mosher. I've got a just a little quick story. You know, I grew up in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and I grew up in the shadow of this huge General Electric factory complex that was there from 1911 on. It closed a few years ago, but at one point there were 20,000 people who worked there in my neighborhood making electric motors for General Electric. Now, all of that's gone overseas, and that's the trend that that you're trying to help us with. But a lot of those jobs went over to become service jobs. A lot of those people, I'm sure, stayed in my hometown and are now selling cars, flipping hamburgers, you know, doing service jobs. But service jobs don't produce as much wealth as manufacturing. Does that fit in with your work?
Yeah, no question. The average manufacturing job has total compensation about 19% higher than the average job in the economy, and mm-hmm. so versus service specifically is probably 20-25% higher. And in addition to that, when you lose a manufacturing job, you lose about 3 or 4 other jobs that supported it. And when you lose a service job, when you gain a service job, you gain maybe 1 other job.
Okay.
So the whole economy starts to shrink when you lose the manufacturing.
Harry, let me ask you something. Do we have any idea how many jobs have actually been lost and how many we could realistically bring back?
Yeah, good question. It's easier to measure the past, and it's clear that about 4 million manufacturing jobs measured at today's levels of productivity have been lost due to the trade deficit. Trade deficit's $500 billion. You calculate based on output per worker, you get about 4 million manufacturing jobs that you could say have been lost, or you could say would come back if we substituted domestic production for the imports. Now, then the question is, what do you have to do to do that? And for the companies, it's you use our total cost of ownership estimator. We calculate that about a quarter of those jobs, about 1 million, would come back if companies would just do the math properly. Don't need any more investment, don't need anything other than to do the math properly. But to get the other 3 million, the other 75%, the government has to get involved. So we need a much better skilled workforce compared to, say, Germany, Switzerland, Austria, that have 70% of the kids in apprenticeship programs. Mm-hmm. We have almost none in our manufacturing apprenticeship programs. We need to get that going. So skilled workforce would be number one. The corporate tax rate that the government's working on now, the lower regulations, and you know, all those things, very, very straightforward, should be done. And then more controversial would be the either a value-added tax or a border adjustment tax.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of debate going on that subject.
You know, you mentioned about the skilled workforce. We've been hearing that from certain industries in this country for a long time, that even though we kept getting these numbers that people were out of work, companies were saying there's nobody for them to hire.
Well, yeah, that and one of the other problems, and I'd like to say I had a solution for it, but I really don't. Although, if there is more opportunity, if like when I got out of high school, my friends could go to work in the factory. They could pick any one of International Harvester, Dana, General Electric. That was like just going to grad school out of high school for these guys. And you could get a good job. It was there. It was available. You could buy a car. You could buy a house and start a family on that job. And that opportunity was there. And I don't know if you can quantify how depressing it is to not see those opportunities there.
The reality is, because of unionization, because we didn't have much international competition at the time, we were able to pay really high wages for relatively unskilled work.
Mm-hmm.
Because one U.S. company was competing with another U.S. company under the same conditions, and when the international competition came in, the companies couldn't pay those wages anymore, And so especially the unskilled high wage work has gone away,
yeah.
but the high skilled high wage work is still here, and there aren't anywhere near enough people with the skills in those jobs or getting trained to fill those jobs as the rest of us retire.
Interesting. One of my friends from high school was a plant manager, and I won't name the plant or the city, but it's in Indiana, and he said his biggest problem in hiring people, hiring kids, was the drug test. He would get them through everything else, and he'd say, okay, we're going to give you a drug test next week. And he said even after that, half of them would fail. I don't know what the solution is.
I read the same thing all over the country. They can't pass the drug test, the alcohol test. And if they do pass those things, then a significant percentage of them don't show up for work.
Yeah.
So,
part of that, I think, is just not seeing the opportunity that used to be there.
I think there's also a problem in that for most people in the U.S., we've been rich and relatively comfortable for so long that we're not as hungry as those other countries are or as hungry as we were, say, in the 1930s. If you didn't work, you didn't eat, so to speak. And so I think that people are learning. I think kids are starting to understand that it's better to go into the STEM jobs, the technical jobs, to get the training to do the math, so to speak, learn to do the math. And it's starting to come back, but it's a long, painful process to get most people to see what's around them objectively.
Now, if I'm a business owner out there, whether I own a manufacturer or I have some sort of business, and I'm not sure if there are levels of this, but how can your organization help me? When I come to your organization, how can you help me?
We help two kinds. One would be the company has offshored, and they're trying to decide whether to bring it back. And then they can use our total cost of ownership estimator, and they can call me, contact me, or emails on the website, reshorenow.org, and we'll help them. Another category is smaller companies that sell to those big companies, and we can help them sell against imports. So there's a Chicago area company, that Mori Corp. The VP sales came to me. He was about to lose an order against a lower-priced Chinese competitor selling to a U.S. customer. We did the TCO estimator calculation. He showed the customer that even though Mori's price was higher, its total cost was lower to the customer, and he credits that with saving a $60 million order.
I love it.
Wow.
And that estimator is available on your website free of charge.
Free on the website for them to use, and we'll help them if we need to help them. And, makes my day when somebody calls me and says they brought a job back or they saved an order because of it. And so it's free. Use it.
That is fantastic. And I'm sure that the president is listening to this show today, and you're going to be getting a call from him. Real quick story. I was in a very high dollar steakhouse last night, and the chef came out to talk to us. And I was eating some calamari, and I said, man, this is the best I've ever had. And he said, you know what? This, I choose to buy American, even though it cost me twice as much. This is from the Northeast somewhere. It was fantastic, and I want to say hats off to him. And I was willing to pay the extra money for it as well. Harry Moser, thank you so much for joining us today, folks. If you would like more information, go to reshorenow.org, reshorenow.org. It is the Reshoring Initiative. Harry, good luck.
Thank you, Peggy and Dave.
Thank you.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.